From a known part of Metropolitan New York City, I am the Hip and this is Lip.
Hello, hello. Good evening, everybody out there in Hipster and Lip Nation. Yes, that's right. It's Hip and Lip coming at you on this, for us, it is a Tuesday evening in unknown parts of Metropolitan New York City. So, again, good afternoon, good morning, good evening, whenever you might be listening, as we are approaching Memorial Day. Hooray. Yes, summer's coming. Who cares? Whatever. As so much going on in the sports world, our Rangers are gone, or your Rangers, whoever's Rangers they are gone. Oh, well, too bad for them. Mets keep free falling. Yankees are hanging tight where they are despite injuries, and the Mets are a complete mass unit right now. And
the Mets are all in. The Mets are all in. Yes, all in.
Yes, indeed. And, of course, NBA and NHL playoffs, the whole thing. And, yes, away we go as our president continues to run our country into the ground. But if we survive till next week, if our country doesn't explode, well, join us again next week then, indeed. All right.
We are a New York sports podcast, and the Lip just gave you the good summary of the last week and the week ahead, and we're going to break it down right here, right now. Yes, there's hockey that's still going on, of course. Maybe it's not puck hockey. Oh, well, but it's still pretty good playoff hockey. We had two game sevens following the Rangers elimination game six, the elimination game that concluded their season. Wah, wah, wah.
Oh, well, too bad.
And, yes, the NBA playoffs, do we start to carry it? Maybe a little. Oh, on Sunday, it looked like we might have something interesting brewing, but not quite so much. Oh, well. And, yes, game two tonight, and we already know where that game is heading, with game one of the Eastern Conference Finals starting tomorrow, Wednesday. Look, we got to talk about Mr. November, number two, Derek Jeter, number two.
His
number can now not be used by another New York Yankees player, active player, for the remainder of history. And, so, yes, the New York Mets. So let's get right to it. Okay. So, look.
No more single digit with the Yankees.
Last episode, the New York Rangers were facing elimination, game six. We broke down the series up until that point. Ottawa led for a total of like a dozen minutes or 18 minutes. Ish for the entire series through game five. And then here we are, game six, and the Rangers, well, they never had a lead in this one. So, oh, well, I feel like it was a microcosm of their regular season, especially their inability to score at home. That was something we've talked about on occasion throughout the several months. And, yes, they come up short. No lead in this game. Rangers go down. Some mildly decent chances at the end at best, but oh well, now Ottawa's playing Pittsburgh in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Indeed, take it away. Well, I mean, the Rangers, I couldn't believe it, their lack of intensity in the beginning of that game. I mean, you would have thought that coming into game six, elimination game, that they would have came out and would have thrown the kitchen sink at Ottawa. Instead, Ottawa took it to the Rangers, and it was just a terrible performance by a flawed New York Ranger team in game six. I mean, honestly, the theme for me, and we talked about this the last show, was how Ottawa would score immediately after the Rangers would multiple times in this series. And to me, they were big goals and turning points in the series. You know, going back to game two when the Rangers are up 3-1, Ottawa scores less than a minute later. Game five, I talked about this last show, this specifically, Rangers go up 2-0 in game five, had a chance to me, step on the throats of Ottawa and really take command of that series. If they win that game, I think they win game six, to be honest. I really do. And less than a minute later, Ottawa scores a terrible goal to make it 2-1. And, you know, the Rangers were just not the same in that game. And, of course, we know about how that game finished. And then game six, Rangers are down 2-0. They score in the second period to make it 2-1. You know, the garden's alive. The fans are loud now. The Rangers, you would think, would gain some momentum from that. And not so, as Erik Karlsson.
Not really, no.
Yes, Erik Karlsson would score about 2.5 minutes later. And that was it. I mean, that was a game-winning goal. I mean, fitting that Erik Karlsson, who had a phenomenal series again, well, a phenomenal games 1, 2, 5, and 6, games 3 and 4, didn't do too much, but games 1, 2, 4, 5, and 6, he was absolutely phenomenal for that team. Really, as close to a one-man team as you're going to see in the NHL at any point in any era, any point throughout NHL history. I mean, that's how good he has been. And you know, the Rangers were in the third period they came out guns blazing, kind of like what you would have expected from them in the first period. Yes, you would have thought. Chris Kreider finally shows up in the playoffs. Oh, where was Chris Kreider this whole time? Well, I don't know. He finally emerges in Game 6. He scores, or at least in the third period of Game 6, scores an early goal. The Rangers are all over Ottawa the rest of the game. They're just hanging on for dear life, is Ottawa. And really, for me, the microcosm of Chris Kreider and his whole career, as good as he was in that third period, he had an opportunity. It was about 2 minutes to go, maybe a little bit less than 2 minutes to go in the third period. He has the puck coming down the left wing. We know how fast he is, how great speed skater he is. And he comes in on the left wing, full speed. He has a chance to go in strong and hard on the goalie, you know, an opportunity to drive to the net, create a scoring chance for himself. Instead, he goes around the net, circles around the net, doesn't turn into anything. No good scoring chance for the Rangers materialize on that play, but he had an opportunity to take the puck to the net. He declines. And to me, that was really a microcosm of really his whole career, Chris Kreider, just never showing enough aggression, never showing that drive, that determination, despite his incredible talent and despite the fact that he is as much a physical specimen as anybody in the league, and just size and speed and everything else, skill. And the Rangers go down, and really, this one should burn Ranger fans. It really should. This was as terrible a loss as I can think of. It really, in the Lundqvist era since that 2006 lockout, this is as bad, if not the worst, loss the Rangers have suffered in the playoffs. I'm not going to go out and say the Rangers were a better team because Ottawa won in six games, so Ottawa was the better team. But the Rangers had more depth than Ottawa. They had an edge in. They should have had an edge in goal. Lundqvist did not play great in Game 6. Was too deep in his net on that Carlson goal. It's been this. You know, that's the way he plays. It's always been his style. That's fine, but it hurt him on that game winning goal. And the Rangers really should have won this series if they would have executed better. They didn't. If they wouldn't have taken, you know, penalties when they did, if they didn't, allow last-minute goals like they did in Games 2 and Game 5, Rangers had every opportunity to put a stranglehold on the series. They never did, and that's why they came up short. That's why they came up losers again, as they consistently are a team that's good enough to make the playoffs, consistently a team that's good enough to make a run in the playoffs, win a round or two, or three, get to the Cup Finals like they did a few years ago, but they're just never, ever, ever, ever good enough to win it all. And that's been the story of Glenn Sather, at least since the second-to-last lockout, the story of the Lundqvist era, and who knows if it's ever going to change, at least in the very short term. So, Ranger fans, this one...
You said this loss... burned Ranger fans more than any other in a long time. When you say that, are you referring to the series? Because if you want to pick out a game, I think you have to take Game 5. I mean, if you're going to isolate a game that they lost.
Oh, the series.
Okay.
But,
I mean,
oh, yeah, Game 5.
Right, but there's a particular game in the series. Game 5, I mean, you win that game and...
I think they win Game 6. I do. Because I think that, again...
They scored a goal. Yeah, and they scored a goal in overtime. It was a high stick, but it would have won the game in that overtime in Game 5, and, you know, sure enough, it's overturned, and rightfully so, and then they lose that game, and thing can happen in an elimination game, you know, you can't rely on that, and why they came out pretty slow to begin with is anybody's guess, but, you know, maybe it's because they chose to play Tanner Glass again. Why the Rangers lost the series, yeah, of course.
Well, his fault. Blame Tanner. I mean, Tanner had no impact in that game. Zero impact in Game 6. So I'm not gonna rail on Alain Vigneault for that. But I mean, they were out.
I don't know.
Alain Vigneault had a tough series, also, as did Derek Stepan, as did Rick Nash, who may have been playing injured, but Rick Nash had a terrible series. I know it's taboo now to criticize Nash because he's always the scapegoat. Oh, he's always the guy that people love to criticize. You know what, Rick Nash had a miserable series. He made zero impact in most of the games in this series, and you have to look at him. Not just him. You look at JT Miller. You look at Kreider. You look at Stepan. You look at Mark Stahl and Dan Girardi, who are, you know, shells of what they used to be. They give you everything they got, but they cannot carry both of those guys next year. You blame the coach for, you know, not pushing the right buttons at the right time, not having the right guys on the ice at the right time. I mean, it's just a combination of things, and the Rangers really are going to have a long summer of self-reflection after that one, because, again, it was a bad loss, and now you could have been playing a decimated Pittsburgh Penguins team, maybe with an opportunity to go to the Cup Final. But, again, a missed opportunity, and this one should stick in the craw of Ranger fans.
The picture bad of a, you know, or as tough as a picture as you paint for the Rangers and Ranger fans and how they – you know, year after year, they can win a series or two, but they can't seem to break through.
Always a bridesmaid, never a bride.
How about the Washington Capitals? I mean, if you're gonna speak so passionately about how tough it was for the Rangers, I mean, it's the Capitals are just to an exponential degree in comparison to the Rangers with respect to that, because they're a better team on paper by far, and yet. When was the last time that they were even in the championship, the Washington Capitals? This is a team that's been at the top of the division how many years now in a row?
Three President's Trophies in the last 8 years, 9 years, whatever it is. In the three President's Trophies, though, in the Ovechkin era. And they've made the playoffs, I think, every year since 2008. They made the playoffs every year?
Every year since 2008.
Yep.
And they've been to the finals zero times each year.
Conference finals they've never been. Think about that. Never passed the second round in the Ovechkin era. Think about that. I mean, that is remarkable. And this was the year that they had a chance.
They had a chance. Game 7 in Pittsburgh and
at home.
And a big bagel. Whoopsie doo. Zero goals scored. Oh well.
A big donut.
So, you know, let's put the icing on the donut to conclude their season. Ouch, that sucks. So, you know, Capital fans, I mean, that's a lot, you know, that's exponentially more frustrating than for Ranger fans, because the Capitals have a better team and have had a better team consistently.
But they also were the unfortunate victims of a terrible playoff format in the NHL. And that's, I mean, the Rangers, everything you heard about the Rangers going into their series, they looked out, playing Ottawa. I mean, everybody picked the Rangers. I mean, they were favorites to win the series. Everybody was picking them. And, you know, I picked Ottawa just because I can't pick the Rangers. I'm not going to sit here and pat myself on the back because I didn't really – I would have said on paper I have to pick the Rangers, but I, of course, couldn't. But going into this series, I mean, the Rangers were at an advantage because of the fact that they were in the Atlantic Division bracket. The Capitals had to again play the Penguins in the second round. I mean, that should have been the conference finals, not the second round matchup, because of the stupid brackets thing with Gary Bettman and the NHL. But to your point, the Capitals, they loaded up this year. This was the year that they were going to go. I mean, they've been going for it every year, no Ovechkin era, fine. But this was the year they bring in, you know, they bring in Shattenkirk at the deadline. I mean, they made a few other moves. You know, they said this has to be the year, right? How can it not be the year this year? And I will say that third period, and Washington was very good in game 5. Great in the third period. They dominated Pittsburgh in game 6, and everybody's saying, "Oh, wow, you know, Washington's going to run roughshod over Pittsburgh in game 7." How can they not? Look at how they played in game 6. And instead, the Pittsburgh Penguins up a goal. Now, the Capitals, I thought, played okay in the first two periods, you know, pretty well in spurts. In the third period, you think that the Capitals are going to be all over the Penguins, right? They're going to throw everything at them. You know, they're going to come out guns blazing. Instead, the Penguins played as good a period of hockey that I can ever remember. They put on a clinic in that third period. They were so good. They were so structured. They were disciplined. Their forecheck was relentless. Washington couldn't get any good opportunities. They scored a goal for good measure to put them up 2-0, which just sucked all the life out of the Capitals. I mean, they didn't have really much life at all in that third period anyway. And the second goal was off an Ovechkin turnover. So here's the criticisms of Ovechkin. Oh, he can never get the job done in a big game. Always comes up small, can't win, yada, yada. It's not all on Ovechkin. It's not fair just to pin it all on Ovechkin. It never has been fair to pin it all on him. Lots of culprits on that team. Nicklas Backstrom, where did he go? Tara, really just not a good series at all for him. I mean, you can go down the line with that team. But that third period, the Pittsburgh Penguins put on a clinic. They were absolutely phenomenal. They outshot the Capitals. Capitals, again, had like virtually no good scoring chances. The Penguins were phenomenal in that third period. Just had to get that out there.
And now they're tied 1-1 with the Ottawa Senators after two games, just like that. We are already in the, you know, in the conference finals. And, you know, Ottawa took game one in Pittsburgh in overtime 2-1, and then Pittsburgh won game two just yesterday. So we are even and going back to Ottawa.
Yes, and the Penguins' defense is decimated. I mean, they lost Trevor Daley last series. Then they may now be out without Justin Schultz. They've been without Chris Letang. Their defensive core is decimated. I mean, I think the Penguins still are going to win this series. I picked them before the series began. I mean, everybody does. It did. I mean, I can't, in my right mind, think that the Ottawa Senators are going to beat them. I guess it's still just a lack of respect for that team, granted. But the Penguins are the defending champs, and the way that they played against the Capitals, I mean, really was incredible the way that they beat them in that Game 7. So I still think they win, but their defensive core right now is absolutely decimated, and they're going to have to play better. And I thought they played a pretty good, a solid Game 2, a very lackluster Game 1. And I think if they win Game 3, I think you might be able to close the book on the series. Maybe a little bit of an
overstatement. Is there much talk about Crosby and his concussions and, you know, is he one hit away from being out for a long time? I mean, he took a shot to the head on the cross check in the series against the Capitals. What, he missed one game or something? I don't
know. Yeah, just the one game.
You know, that dude's he suffered many concussions and
collision in game 6. So you're right. Yeah.
So they lose him.
There was a lot of criticism actually about that. I don't know if you heard. I mean, we saw like there was a lot of criticism about the way that they handled that whole situation.
Sure.
That, you know, the NHL now has the concussion spotters, and where were they? How come they didn't yank Crosby off the ice? You know how? You know, and then there was conflicting and contradictory information coming from the Penguins. Oh, we looked at him. No, we didn't look at him. No, we did. He went through. He passed the baseline testing. I mean, it's really the NHL has to, I mean, they like to pat themselves on the back and crow about how they're the leaders of the concussion research, and that they're at the forefront of trying to figure out a way to stymie concussions and treat them and prevent them and everything. And the NHL got absolutely destroyed. And you know what? Rightfully so. They deserved all the criticism that they got for the way that they handled the Crosby situation in Game 6. After that, that was just a nasty collision into the boards that Crosby took, and he should have been immediately removed from the ice. Give him the testing. If he passes, he's fine. All right, send him back in. But the fact that he never left the game was just remarkable. At least it did not look like he did, even though the Penguins were like, well, he didn't. It was just ridiculous the way the whole thing was happening. Ridiculous.
let's move on to some NBA.
Oh, so, that sport, yes.
Yeah,
What about Ducks Predators though? Go Preds go! Just want to reiterate that I am rooting for the Predators.
Go Preds go! Series is at 1-1. Game 3 is on as we speak, tied up in the third. So there you go. There's your update.
And Mr. Carey Underwood.
We're at the point now where we have the Eastern and Western Conference Finals both underway. You know, I thought it was weird that the NBA chose to have game one of the Western Conference Finals take place before the Eastern Conference Finals series actually concluded. Because
we've seen that before.
I'm not saying it's unprecedented, but I think they shouldn't do that. I think it's just an unfair advantage to the Western Conference Finals team because they just get more rest. I don't like it.
Well, I think both the Spurs and the Celtics will be fine when they both sweep through the Warriors and the Cavaliers, right? Oh, wait a minute, never mind.
You know, the Spurs had a chance on Sunday. They were up 25 points early in the third quarter. You know, Mr. Leonard goes down two times, three times, left ankle, right ankle. You lose track after a while. Is he staying in? Is he not staying in? Finally, he can't stay. I think he stepped on the player on a player's foot, on David Lee's foot on the bench, I think it was. And the final twist, if you will, that resulted in him not coming back. And as a result, the Golden State comes roaring back, unsurprisingly, is able to squeak it out in the end, do just enough. And so what could have been a huge game one upset for San Antonio, what a team to just even be in that position at that point in the game in Golden State is remarkable. To be up by that many points.
Well, I mean, they are in the Western Conference Finals. I mean, you would hope that they would put up a little bit of a competitive fight. But
but they were up by 25 points.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just look at the makeup of that team, and it just continues to surprise you that they can still be so effective. Nevertheless, they lose, and then now they're about to lose game two, barring a, you know, 28-point halftime comeback.
I don't think that's happening. I think the game is pretty much over, I would say. So it looks like it'll be a 2-0 lead for the Warriors. Yeah, well, Pachulia, I mean, after, you know, the play that Leonard finally got, you know, went out in that game, coming down after he shoots the ball, comes down on Pachulia's foot. You know, Pachulia kind of got his leg in there, and, you know, there was a lot of outcry from the Spurs. It was a dirty play. Leonard didn't think so. He said, no, it wasn't dirty. Popovich had a different opinion. You know, just seeing the replay, it's a reckless play. I mean, just, you know, when you're going to be stepping forward, that the guy's coming down, he's going to come down on top of you, whether he actually lands on your foot or not. It's a reckless play. You don't like to see it because it can result in what we saw. Now, I mean, Leonard was a ticking time. I mean, his ankle was a ticking time bomb. I'm sure he was probably like, he could have breathed on him and he would have went down and, would have been out. So, you know, like a feather probably could have hit it. He would have went down. I mean, that's you know, that's
a feather. Yes.
Yes.
<That's
good. laughs> Maybe a Randy Johnson fastball explodes a bird or something that's flying, and you know, the feathers fall on top of his ankle. And, oh God, my ankle!
So helpful. So helpful with the feather lip. such a helpful description of the ankle with the feather.
Yes. Man down.
It's all so much clarity now. Yes. All right, well, look, I mean, is it setting up the likely, you know, Cleveland-Golden State final. Of course, Cleveland still has four games to win, and they are starting at Boston. Remember, Boston was the one seed, and yes. Boston tested Washington in seven games in the conference semifinals, which took place last night.
Yesterday. Yeah, I was rooting for the Wizards. I can't root for Boston. I can never root for Boston. So I was, not that I love the Wizards, but I was rooting for them. And, you know, that they had a lead. The Wizards had an opportunity to win that game yesterday. And, I mean, John Wall had a terrible fourth quarter. Did not have a good game overall. Had a terrible fourth quarter, though. I mean, it was Beal that was keeping him in that game the whole time. And Boston, you know, when you have a guy come off the bench like Kelly Olynyk and, you know, scores 26 points on, you know, shoots, you know, 70 whatever percent from the floor, and I mean, couldn't miss yesterday. And Washington's defense was terrible in that game, but you know, they're not going to be able to rely on Kelly Olynyk to win the series against the Cavaliers. It was funny, they kept, you know, Olynyk was the guy that was embroiled in that thing with who was the other Wizards player? I forget his name now. For the life of me, I can't remember his name, but he was embroiled in that little brouhaha where he delivered a blow to the Wizard player, and he came up and shoved them down and whatever. They kept cutting to him, though, every single time Olynyk hit a shot, they cut to the Wizard player, forgetting his name. But, the Wizards, you know, valiant effort. It would have been nice to see Wall maybe, you know, give LeBron and company some fits. But Boston, I don't know what you think. Boston, to me, has really – if they win a game, I think you'd be – if you're Boston, you're ecstatic if you win a game. I think they're legitimate happy to be here. You know, maybe if they, you know, win game one, you know, you can have a little fun from there, especially if they win the first two games, then you can have some fun. But if the Cavaliers win tomorrow night, I think you can just be like, all right, well, why even bother? Get us to the finals. Just get us there already so we can just get that over with.
Great. Just get us to the great product that's been handed to us all season long.
Yes, exactly. The NBA. What we knew has been coming. Yes. Since game seven of last year, we knew exactly what was coming again, exactly 1 year later. We're 51 weeks later. Just get us there. Just please.
Let's move on to Mr. November, because it's May 16th, technically, as of right now, as we discuss Mr. November. So on Sunday also was the retirement of the captain.
Number two, Derek Jeter. Number two.
And, you know, listening to I had the chance to catch some Mike Francesa in the car on Friday. So there was, breaking down his ranking of the Yankees of all time, important discussion. Inspiring debate, because it just, up in the morning and think about how awesome your day is going to be until you get to that point where you have the opportunity to break down all the different Yankees and the order that you get to rank them in, because that's just such an amazing discussion to have.
And the people that are listening, I'm sure like 80% of them never even saw any of those guys play, with the exception of Jeter, maybe Mantle. I remember when I saw
Babe. Maybe they caught a little bit of Yogi. They caught some Yogi Berra too, I'm sure.
Oh, Yogi Berra, yes. Oh, I remember back in my day, Babe Ruth. Oh, yes. He was such a phenomenal left-handed hitter. Oh, his power to the gaps was amazing.
What's even the point of like doing a ranking other than to have a discussion of comparing players? Whatever, they're different eras. I mean, talk about Jeter onto himself and what he did at his time, for 20 almost 20 years with the Yankees. So the dude went out on top, having a game, a walk-off hit in his last at bat ever at Yankee Stadium. His 3,000th hit was a home run. How many championships did he win with the team?
Five.
What
were your thoughts of Jeter? Now, of course, remember everybody. I think we talked about this very, very early on in Hip and the Lips episodes. But of course, the Hip is a former Yankee fan. It was not very hip to the roof of the Yankees, but he was a Yankee fan in the days of Derek Jeter.
The diehard listeners already knew that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm just wanted to reiterate. So, want to get a former Yankee fan's thoughts on the great number two. How great was the number two, Derek Jeter? Would you say that he was one of the best players of all time, the best Yankee you ever saw, the best clutch hitter ever? Which one of those perfectly fits?
Derek Jeter was just a guy that you watch play that is somebody who you want to aspire to be, not just on the field but off the field. And
of course,
the work ethic.
Supermodels. Every one that he's
a lot of work. A lot of work ethic to hang out with those supermodels.
From Mariah Carey to Minka Kelly to Gabrielle, wasn't it Gabrielle?
It was like he could say and do no wrong, and he would go out of his way to achieve that without putting down other people. And, because it was all focused on getting the most out of his opportunity that he was given, and could a role model serve to young, aspiring athletes than that? Or just non-athletes, sports fans. So, look, was he the best player that played on all of his teams? No. There he was. Sometimes retiring a number is bigger than what the stats show. And look, you could point to the stats and the team accomplishments that he had, but he was in many ways, he was above the game in a selfless way. And you don't see too many players come along who exemplify that. So, that's really a large part behind why he's so revered and why his number's getting retired. Not because he, hit so many home runs or, filled up the stat sheet among the best. At his position, he was like, when you consider his position, okay, now you could start to argue, was he the best player at his position? No, Alex Rodriguez was during the same era. But at the end of the day, who more's number would you want to retire as a Yankee than his? You think of it that way.
Yeah, I'm well said. I mean, I think everything that you said absolutely, resonates with people, especially, whether you're a Yankee fan or a baseball fan. Well, here's what I'll say about Jeter. And I, have certain memories of Jeter growing up. Obviously, that 96 team, we can reminisce, we could be here all day. I mean, reminiscing about Jeter. But I think, you put it perfectly. He was never the best at at his position. He was never one of the best players in baseball. He was never, you know, he was rarely an MVP candidate. He was that one year where everybody thought he should have won, was it 2006 when he batted 340 or whatever. But, you know, he was always looked at as a guy that obviously portrayed himself with grace and dignity and class, always said the right thing, was never a guy that put himself above the team, you know, very much in stark contrast to a former teammate and friend of his, Alex Rodriguez, who, you know, came here, and it was never more apparent that disparity between the two personalities when they played together side by side. And everybody, you know, Derek Jeter was always the beloved Yankee, and A-Rod can never be that guy as he always tried to be. But it's not about A-Rod. But my point is that Derek Jeter, like you said, nobody's, there's very few athletes in the history of really any sport that's spoken about with such reverence. But Jeter also, and I'm going to say this too, Jeter benefited greatly. Now, Jeter has built a, he's basically building a business. He's building a brand, an entity, Jeter Incorporated. We've known for years that Jeter has, you know, he's always said he never wanted to manage. He didn't want to go into TV. He doesn't have the personality to be in TV. So what's he going to do? Well, he's going to buy a baseball team, which is something that's been rumored now with the Florida Marlins. We'll see if that happens. But the what he has built and what he will continue to build would not have happened if he did not play for the Yankees, did not play for those great teams that won, it seemed like, every year in the beginning of his career. And because he was a part of those teams, he's now able to build a brand that is really only a few other athletes in the history of sports have built. Guys like Michael Jordan, guys like Tiger Woods, guys like LeBron James. Peyton Manning is, I guess, trying to elevate himself to that. I mean, only, you know, a few guys. But those guys I just mentioned were always the best at their craft. Derek Jeter never was. So Derek Jeter has done a phenomenal job of, you know, kind of mortgaging what he accomplished with the Yankees and building it into the brand that he has and will continue to build. So I give him credit for that. The one thing about Jeter, though, you never felt that you got to know him or really what he was thinking, what was going through his head. He rarely showed emotion. He always came across as a little bit, you know, almost like aloof at times and, you know, just kind of, you know, he – in interviews was very reserved, very guarded, always, you know, gave you the cliche answers. And, you know, that's part of, you know, his persona, his image. And I think a lot of people admired that about him because he, again, always came across as a team first guy. And I think he legitimately was. And, you know, he always, again, was a big part of the teams that won the championships in the early going and then in 2009. And like you said, he was a role model, a guy that you can look up to, especially considering the guys that we have railed against for certain infractions. Whether current Mets or Yankees or other guys, Jeter was never, ever embroiled in anything like that off the field. Maybe a few tax issues, which I'm sure you can speak on a little bit if you wanted to. But well, we don't have to do that. But other than that, Derek Jeter was always a guy who was looked at as being spotless off the field and on the field. Yeah, and always played the game hard in the right way.
in the discussions about Jeter, I'm just going to get this in there. You're not the first to mention this – perceived blemish of tax issues, like it's like he deserves to go to jail or something. I think it's,
I don't know what I think. I knew of something.
I think it's far overblown. I think it's far overblown, and I don't think it should be considered a blemish in the slightest. The basic backstory is that he claimed that he was not a resident of New York for tax purposes while he was on the Yankees. It was an aggressive position because he bought a huge home in Tampa. But, you know, New York State's going to say, well, how can you, you know, you're the face of the New York Yankees. How could you not be a resident? Because the significance is if you're a resident of New York, you pay tax on all your income to New York State. Whereas if you're a resident of Florida, you pay no income tax to Florida on your income. Now, look, even if he gets the benefit of not being a New York resident, he still has to pay New York tax on the income he earns while he's playing in New York. So it's not like he's fully, you know, he's on the flip side of not having to pay any tax to New York. It's just all the games he plays outside of New York. If he's not a New York resident, he won't have to pay tax on the income to New York on, if that makes sense. Long story short, calling it tax issues, he was audited. People that make the amount of money that Derek Jeter makes get audited all the time. Anybody that followed the presidential election knows that people like Donald Trump get audited all the time. That is not an overstatement. So he had an audit, and it got settled.
All right.
Big deal.
Right. No blemish. So what? No blemish then. Okay. I mean, I knew.
Okay.
Would you, at one point.
Some might say, "Well, look, he should never have tried to take the position. He was not a resident of New York State." I say, you know, he's entitled to if he thinks he had good, you know, tax counsel and had some good arguments.
Yeah, well, I'm sure he had good.
Was it a tough argument to make that you're not a New York resident if you play in New York for the New York Yankees in the face of the Yankees? Yes, but I don't consider it a. I don't think it's fair to taint any of the celebratory, you know, aspects surrounding the retirement. And because I heard Boomer Esiason mention it on the air during the show.
I didn't hear it. It was in the back.
Didn't go into it at all. He just briefly said, and he has tax issues. And I almost called the station to question him. I don't know. It was like 6:30 in the morning and I was driving out to Long Island and I just didn't feel like getting into it on the phone. But you know, there was no extrapolation on what he meant by that. It's not like he was, you know, hiding income and not declaring it or anything like that. Nothing along those lines where you're looking to go behind bars. So I think we should move on.
All right.
It was a little odd,
I will say, at the ceremony that he didn't really have a speech. And, I'm not saying that you necessarily had to have, like, all these prepared remarks or whatever, or bullet points. We know that our president doesn't like to do that, so maybe he's taking the page out of our president. Just kind of shooting from the hip a little bit, or shooting from the lip, as I may say. But I thought that was a little strange. It's kind of like, yeah, thank you, Yankee fans. Thank you. I mean, I just hope he really appreciates how – you think it can't be lost on him. How can it be? They've been chanting his name forever. So you just hope that he really appreciates just how much Yankee fans have loved him all these years and will continue to love him. And you hope that he at least stays, even if he buys the Marlins or whatever, you hope that he can at least stay somewhat involved in the organization, come back for old timers days every now and again, and, you know, still continue to be somewhat of a face of the team. You know, he's still alive. I mean, all the other Yankees are dead. I mean, you know, going back to, you know, Ruth, Garrick, all those guys are gone, long gone. Barra recently. So, I mean, Jeter is the last guy, and who the hell knows when another number will be retired, maybe in 99 we'll hang from the rafters one day, but that's years down the road. So hopefully he stays involved with the team, stays at least has his face out there for Yankee fans to be able to see. So, all right,
let's move on to the current team.
Well, one more thing I just want to add. Miss November on the plaque. What's the deal with that? Well, why'd they have to put Miss November on the plaque? Because he hit a home run in November once and Michael Kay won Mr. November. I mean, Reggie Jackson was Mr. October.
Yeah, I only said it right. Yep.
No, I know. I mockingly. Well, or even if not, but like, I'm just still questioning it. Like, why they had to put that on his plaque? The captain, fine. He's the captain. Like, you know, maybe something else, Mr. Clutch or whatever. Miss November because he once hit a home run in November, and the only reason was because of 9/11. That's the only reason that he was able to hit a home run in November. Otherwise, this World Series would have ended in October like it always used to. I know now it goes in November a little bit because of the wild cards, but. It's just, I don't know. I was like, really? Missing November?
Yeah, I don't think it really made any sense either.
Yeah. Oh, well.
I have to agree with you on that one.
All right.
Yankees that are playing now, right? Amongst with number 99. So, another comment that I heard on sports radio is that the starting rotation has a lot of work to do.
They've come back down to earth, a few of them, a little bit.
But you know what? I was thinking about a counterpoint to that comment.
Yeah, right.
In the American League, how many teams off the top of your head, current starting rotations, healthy, current pitchers who are on their rotations, would you rather have right now?
Well, of course, the ace is ace. The ace is ace in Houston, Mr. Lance McCullers. Come on.
I said rotations. I didn't say – Houston is a team whose rotation I might rather have than the Yankees currently. That is one that immediately comes to mind. Can you think of anybody else?
I mean, David Price is coming back in Boston, right? I mean, Sale
– He's not healthy. I don't count David Price. He's not pitching. I'm saying healthy rotations right now.
Well, I mean, Chris Sale is striking out everybody. Was he striking out like 80% of the batters he faces?
So you want the whole rotation because of one pitcher?
No, I mean, once immediately Bryce comes back, but other than that,
but
right?
But that's but you know what? Injured pitchers always take longer to come back than they're projected to. So I never put stock into when they project the starting pitcher is going to come back. If they're like predicting 4 weeks from now, it almost always takes longer. So that's why even for fantasy, I hate trying to buy a starting an injured starting pitcher because with the rehabs, they always take longer. They always do.
Yes, I've been waiting for Junior.
Fine. I mean, you make the point about Boston. Fine, you make the point about Boston, but David. Yeah. So again, back to the
Cleveland. I mean Cleveland has starters, right? I mean, look, who's Cleveland, the Indians.
So Kluber's injured. Remember, yeah. He's on the DL.
All right, Salazar.
It's easy. Salazar let up 4 home runs today.
Did he really?
Yes. Carlos Carrasco left his start yesterday because of pectoral tightness after 3 innings.
Oof.
I'm telling you, right now in this league, starting pitching is completely decimated. And look, I don't say that I like the Yankees rotation. That's not my point. My point is when you put the rotation up against the other rotations in the league, it doesn't look so bad.
What's amazing,
when you isolate it to
pitching everywhere has been down.
What's that?
Pitching everywhere has been nationally.
Yes. Cool. Yes. It's been down. Look, the Nationals probably have a rotation that you'd want more than the Yankees with, you know, Scherzer and Strasburg and a few of the other guys they have. That's a rotation you would want over the and you can't even say the Mets now. Beginning of the year, you'd rather have the Mets rotation than the Yankees. But now
story. The Mets. Mets we'll
get into the Mets. I didn't want to transition it there, but I'm just saying, you know, Tanaka got destroyed on Jeter retirement night. Just his work. You thought his opening day start was bad. He pummeled on Sunday night, letting up 8 runs in less than 2 innings. I mean,
well, what's amazing to me is that who would have thought that the Yankees would be where they are right now? They're sitting 9 games over. We're about to go 10 games over 500. And if you would have said to us at the beginning of the season that the Yankees would be 10 games over 500, however, Masahiro Tanaka would be pitching to a 6 ERA, I would never have believed you for a second. I would have said, I mean, in order for that team to have any success, he's going to have to pitch, you know, like an ace, like a legitimate ace. And he's been anything but. I mean, I know he's pitched a little bit better, and, you know, he just had the bad, awful start.
He had Sunday. You take out his 2 really bad starts. I mean, it's taking out 2 really bad starts, but not that he's been dominant, but I know, I'm not saying he has been great, but, you know, for pitchers, it's still a small sample size. You know, we're a quarter of the way into the season. You're talking about 7, I don't know, 7 starts maybe per pitcher to this point, roughly. Maybe 8. You know, it's still a pretty small sample size for pitchers.
Yeah, no, I understand that.
And, but look, their hitting is you know, just been otherworldly compared to what the expectations were. So, and that's despite Gary Sanchez and Greg Bird doing pretty much nothing.
But here's a question now, Chapman being out. So now Chapman's out a month. Yep, now their bullpen's going to get very taxed.
And it's going to be more, and mark my words, more than a month. I'm telling you, these month things are, it's if you go back and look at these longer-term injuries for pitchers, when they say it's a month and a half or 2 months. It always takes longer, especially with arm.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shoulder. You know, it's
parts of the arm. So it's not going to take a month. It's going to be more. It's going to be longer. He will. I would be surprised if he's back July 1st. I would say at this point, it's the middle of May.
I would agree. I mean, I'd be shocked if he's back. I agree. I'd be shocked if he's back in a month, especially considering it's not like it's a, you know, non-pitching, you know, shoulder or, you know.
But a difference is that they don't have to get they don't have to build up their stamina again like starters do. With starters, if they're going to miss a month, they have to get stretched out. They call it, right. They have to get 2 or 3 rehab starts so they get built back up to 100, throwing 100 pitches. Relievers don't have to get stretched out quite as long as starters do, so it's not as a pronounced.
That's a good point. You're
Longer, you know, prognosis than it is for starters when they give it. But still, they're not gonna rush him back. And yeah, I mean, look, it's gonna stretch their bullpen thinner. I mean, they had it great with Betances. I mean, you know, Betances was pissed off in the offseason because of how his arbitration went. But I mean, you know, the role that
he'll earn
feels,
his money now in Randy Levine's mind. Now you'll actually earn your money.
But see, he's not gonna he was almost in a way more valuable in the role that he was serving as a setup man, pitching the seventh and eighth and getting bridging the gap to the from this, you know, questionable rotation, like many other rotations, to Chapman. Now they're not gonna have that. I mean, it's gonna be a piecemeal job, and that's gonna hurt. It's gonna show. You know, it's not gonna show in one game, but it's gonna be part of, you know, the Yankees coming back to earth a little bit, as will their offense. We all know that. So at the same time, maybe the starting pitching will actually rebound a bit.
Maybe, but I think they're also – I think you're going to see now the – you're going to see the warts and the flaws in that Yankee team because, I mean, like you said, their hitting has just been off the charts, and it's got to regress. It's got to come back to earth. It's just the, you know, the law of averages is going to catch up to that.
But some of the guys that haven't been playing well maybe
possibly,
will
right.
Sanchez offset and, that. So Gary Sanchez could get hot, right. You know.
I mean, Gardner's been setting the world on
Chris
fire.
Carter's going to – yeah, Carter will hit a little bit here and there. He's a very streaky guy, so – I think some of the highs will be offset by the, you know, the coming down of the guys who are on highs will be offset a bit. Like Brett Gardner's finally turned it on.
But their bullpen has been phenomenal. I mean, their bullpen is so good. It's pitching to a 2.36 ERA. I mean, their bullpen has been absolutely just incredible. And, you know, they rely so heavily on that bullpen. I mean, you know, in addition to Chapman, like you said, Betances and Tyler Clippard and Adam Warren. I mean, like everybody has been contributing.
Clippard has a 1.08 ERA and Jonathan Holder, 1.69.
I mean, you know, and if you want to say that why shouldn't they continue that? That's fine. But, you know, now they're going to be pitching, you know, more important, maybe stressful innings, and they're going to be getting more important and tougher outs. So that means that they're going to, you know, that they're going to be tested here, and maybe they'll pass the test. They'll withstand the test that they're going to get. But without Chapman at the back of that bullpen, you know, anchoring the back of that bullpen, and Betances has not been good in the closer role in his career so far. He did it last year, was not very good. So we'll see if he can make the transition and the adjustment, but I mean, they rely very heavily on that bullpen, and the starting pitching, maybe, you know, it can hold serve a little bit here, and Pineda will continue to pitch well, and Tanaka will finally, you know, recompose himself, and Sabathia gave him a good start tonight. That's fine. But, I mean, the strength of this team we know is the bullpen, and they're hitting, and they're starting pitching. You just say, give us some innings. Just pitch five or six decent innings. Just do that for us, please. And especially now without Chapman, they're going to be really be relying on that starting rotation to give them some innings. Because if not, they're going to tax that bullpen, and it'll hurt them in the latter months of the season. Even if it doesn't hurt them right now, it will in August and September if they're battling.
At the same time, I feel like a lot of other teams are going to be in a similar situation with relying on their bullpens because fair. So many other teams have terrible starting rotations.
No, you mean like the Mets?
Yeah, look, so let's get into that team. So do you know offhand who started tonight for the New York Mets?
Hey, was it that starting Milwaukee pitcher? Brewer reject cast off? What was his name? Malone?
Tommy Malone. Who would have thought on May 16th, 17th season, that Tommy Malone, and it's not like a starter needed for a doubleheader. This is on a Tuesday night, and the Mets did play last night, but I mean, just a regular turn in the rotation goes to Tommy Malone. What more do you need to know about where this team is right now? Plus, their closer is maybe out for the year.
Familia's
maybe done for the season.
He probably is. I can't. I'd be shocked.
So what more? I mean. It's just beyond brutal. I mean, it's just a really unfortunate situation. They would be lucky to play 500 baseball for the next like 2 weeks.
Well, luckily for them, though, despite, and again, you know, again, who knows if they could even tread water here? They have so many injuries. They're begging anybody to give them a couple innings at the start of a game, whether it be Malone, like you said, or you just, I mean, it's just unbelievable just how that rotation's been decimated. Harvey, who knows what's going on with him? after another terrible start last Friday. I mean, DeGrom, I mean, he strikes guys out, but I mean, even he's just struggled with, you know, Syndergaard, who knows if he, when, if and when he's coming back, Mats, Lugo, don't even mention them, because who the hell knows if they're even coming back this year either.
Mats is in, he's pitching extended spring training, so he's slowly working his way back, but my guess is at some point along the rehab, another issue will pop up, because
it always does.
That's just Steven Matz. It always does. It always does.
Cespedes, you know, and Cabrera, and it's just that, you know, due to, you know, just came back. I mean, it's just, it's on and on with that team, and it's just, it's killed them. But their one saving grace is the National League is so mediocre. I mean, forget about the division at this point. Washington's probably going to run away with it. So, I mean, they're 8 back in a loss column. Forget about the division. But that rest of that National League is so mediocre. They may have a chance if they can hold, you know, tread water, withstand, you know, the injuries, get some guys back, beg anybody in that bullpen to, you know, not give up a home run on the first pitch, you know, throw a 92-mile-an-hour fastball down the middle that gets hit 420 feet. Just please don't do that. Like it seems like they do every night. Their bullpen has been atrocious. And if they can, you know, somehow make it, you know, through the All-Star break and be within a couple games of the wild card, then maybe they can get some guys back and maybe, just maybe, make a run at it. But this very well could be a lost season for the Mets. And if it is, it would be a real shame, because they put all their eggs in this year's basket. They really did. And who the hell knows what they're going to look like next year. So it's a shame. It stinks for Mets fans. I said to Mets fans a few weeks ago, you know, come back from the ledge. If you're back on the ledge, I got nothing to say to you. I got nothing to say. I really don't. Look forward to next year. Wait till next year. We'll get them next year. That's what I got to say to you. Otherwise, I got nothing, because it's that bad right now.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad.
Mediocre National
League. Hipsa moment of zenith, speaking of bad.
Well, we've now had this particular gentleman as a theme of our hipster moment is zenith multiple times. So what's one more time, huh? So the NBA lottery was
only one more time, I'm sure.
Only one more time, we promise, or maybe not. So wink, wink. The NBA lottery was tonight. The Knicks, yes, that other disaster that is a New York sports franchise, a New York Knicks amongst many. Everybody was hoping maybe the Knicks will get lucky. Maybe it'll be like 1985 and Patrick Ewing and the ball bounces and we get the number one overall pick. And a certain New York sports talk show radio host by the name of Mike Francesa, second time that name was uttered during this show. So, yes, Mike Francesa, at the very beginning of his show today, I got to listen for about 5 minutes. And, of course, he started by saying, I have a very good feeling about the Knicks tonight. I think something's in a good's going to happen. Maybe it's Walt, him being there, good luck charm. I have a good feeling about the Knicks tonight. I think they're going to get one of the top picks. I really do. Sorry, Knicks fans. As soon as Mike Francesa uttered those words, every Knicks fan just smacked their palm on their forehead in absolute disbelief, saying, really, you mushed the Knicks? Really? You had to say that and completely jinx and mush the Knicks? Sure enough, the Knicks get the number 8 pick in the draft for this year. Not number 1, not number 2, not number 3, and not number 4. Number 8. So enjoy, Knicks fans. We'll get a halfway decent player that'll maybe score, 13 points, average 4.5 assists and shoot 43% from the field, and we can all jump for joy at whoever the hell that player is.
Is there even like a consensus number 1 pick for this upcoming draft?
I think that guy from Washington, Fultz, I think he is, I wouldn't say a consensus, not like the defensive end from Texas A&M in the NFL draft, or Connor McDavid a few years ago in the NHL, or Austin Matthews, whatever. But I think Fultz is the guy that everybody's expecting will go number 1.
The guy.
But a lot of point guards. The Knicks are in dire need of a point guard. Maybe they can get lucky if De'Aaron Fox, a guy we've talked about prior, the Kentucky point guard, maybe he'll fall to them at number 8 if they can only get so lucky and they can pick him, because I think he'll be a really good NBA. I think he'll be a very good NBA player. But who the hell knows what they'll be able to do with that pick? Again, they'll get a decent player, but they probably won't get a game, you know, a franchise altering, changing type of player like maybe one of these other guys at the very, very top can be. Although, I mean, there's no LeBron this year. There's nobody, You know, there's no Anthony Davis, there's no LeBron, there's nobody like that coming out of the draft this year. So it's not like, oh, we could have gotten, you know, the next great superstar. No, there's no superstar in this draft. So, oh well, Mike Francesa mushed the Knicks again, or Nick mushed another New York team, as he's accustomed to doing, and whereas we as sports fans are accustomed to in this town. So, all right.
All right.
Next, also, before we get to the very last segment, I just want to take a moment to, I guess I'll do it right now, wish our lead creative consultant, we've mentioned him on our program multiple times. I'll mention him today because it is his birthday today. Yes, happy birthday, lead creative consultant, turning 33, I guess, right? Something like that. I don't know, something like that.
I guess.
We were talking, maybe we have another 40 years to live, so we're just that much closer to our collective demises. So with that, that'll take us to the hipster beer of the week. Of course, everybody's favorite segment, yours and mine. What do you got brewing for us today, Mr. Hip?
Yes, we have a mention of a brewery that has never been mentioned before. Amazing, on the show.
Too.
And we've never mentioned and it's them. And it's New Jersey. Three threes. So it's not.
Oh, you tricked me.
Numerical. It's not numerical. 3-3. It's the word 3, and then the numerical 3, apostrophe S, 3-3's Brewing Company. And the beer is Chaos IPA, K-A-O-S.
See, I thought you were going to say the Brooklyn 3's. That's where I thought you were going.
Nope. Different brewery. That's 3's, T-H-R-E-E-S. This is 3-3's. And they are located in Hammonton, New Jersey, which is basically southern central New Jersey. I don't know if I've ever seen any of their beers canned or bottled, but it is on draft, definitely in New Jersey, and I believe also in New York City. I could not find a description for this particular beer, admittedly. I looked on 3-3's does not have a website. They're only on Facebook. Or the Instagram sites. They don't have their own actual URL. So I couldn't find a description of this IPA. But I had it on draft two Sundays ago. Wasn't amazing, but it was serviceable enough to mention because we want to try to work in all the craft breweries that are in the metropolitan New York City. So there you have it.
All right.
Good
all
show. Right. So number 60 in the books.
And remember,
put it in the books.
And remember, it's just around number. Just like Derek Jeter's not about numbers, we are also not about numbers. It's only around number. We're all about the intrinsic value, the intangibles. Just like Derek Jeter, we the hip and the lip. Yes, not about the numbers. Not about the numbers.
the intangible farting and burping ability of the lip in particular. And on that note, we'll see you next time.
All right, next. I'm not here, I'm not here.